Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. I haven't heard from Jason Caldwell, so he probably will be joining us.
You recognize the name of that officer?
Oh, yeah. How about that?
How about that? Yeah.
Did not know that he's with the local law enforcement.
Why not? I mean, it's a cool thing.
Yeah. I mean, Brendan Coffey, former Auburn offensive lineman.
I had a bit of a fender bender. Oh, I'm back, by the way. Hi, everybody.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. You got everything moved?
I got everything moved. Wow. I expect my deposit back. I think I did pretty well. Drew, invaluable yesterday, helping get some of the bigger stuff out. I feel bad is that because I'm... And I've been able to collect a lot of cool stuff from my parents, my grandparents, my sister. Some of the stuff that, they're moving. They're going to, it might get thrown away. Might get taken to a thrift store or something. So I've been able to keep a pretty nice collection of some cool old furniture. Not all of it gets to go to my new spot. And so I'll tell you what.
You don't have any friends that could store some of the stuff for you?
I don't know the next time I'm going to need it. You know what I mean?
If it's something that had any sentimental value, I think
something with real sentimental value would have stayed with my parents. Something like that. But these were just chairs that had fallen out of the rotation and different things. I'll give you an unsolicited plug, Bill. Habitat for Humanity, the restore.
Oh, yes.
There on Opelika Road, Pepperell. They just got a nice drop off of some very cool furniture.
That I
hope goes to a cool place. But that's finished. I was headed home to my new place to sort of finish things off. And I was backed into by another motorist. Total accident. Just, somebody backing up at Magnolia and Gay. Somebody backing up out of that New Auburn Bank. Backed right into me in the turn lane. and didn't realize what had happened until the tow bar of their car, their truck, had gotten me right in the rear passenger or the rear driver's side door, right there. And nice little.
Yeah. So you saw it coming at you.
I leaned on the horn.
One of those where
leaned on the horn as I saw him. I said, "This guy's backing up. He's still backing up. It's a total accident. One of the responding officers. Nobody was hurt. Just wanted a record for the file. And one of the responding officers.
That's very nice of you, because a lot of times the person who's backed into might later say, "Yo, my neck."
Well, I've had people tell me that I'm exactly who they don't want to get out of the car in that situation. Like if you back into a car, you're like, "Oh no, not." But whatever.
Well, I mean, because the last thing I remember, this was my fault. Technically, but there was a bush that had grown up. It's over on...
It was by Burger King, right?
Yeah.
Over on College, yeah. I remember this. Yeah.
It sure was. I mean, I was coming out of there and trying to pull up to see, and a car came up very quickly, and I got the back end of it, got the back end of their car. And it was, I mean, that was my fault. But the officer noted that, you really couldn't see the other direction. But then months later, I get word from my insurance company that they have claimed that it was a total loss. The car was a total loss, and there was all kinds of bodily injuries. And it's like, oh my goodness! And I went through all kinds of,
Now, did you
accusations?
Did you have,
we're not going to do
did
anything.
Did you have the police come for that?
Oh yes.
I had a bad experience in my first year as a driver where I was involved in an accident. That was not my fault. Did not let the police come in, and I just sort of we exchanged information and everything, and then the information
that there's a reason. Yes,
and then that information. Especially when you're talking about a cell phone that suddenly stops working and an email address that's sending you back bad. It's like, well, I guess that's not really gonna. I mean, I didn't get his driver's license number or something, and if you're gonna try to handle it yourself, do something like that. But no, I mean Auburn PD came, and I think the whole point of this was. Brendan Coffey, former Auburn offensive lineman.
How about that?
Is now part of Auburn PD, and I thought I recognized the officer, saw the name. I go, I know exactly. exactly who that is.
Talk a little football with
him? Talked a little football. Mentioned it tomorrow. Cool. Tomorrow things were getting started. So yeah, shout out to Brendan Coffey becoming one of Auburn's finest.
Yeah, how about that? So I mean, not the way you wanted to find that out, but
could have been worse ways. Oh, well, to find out.
Absolutely could have been worse ways.
Could have been chalking me off.
Yeah, no kidding. But yeah, that is neat. And as you mentioned, tomorrow, the first day of fall practice for Auburn, Coach Hugh Freeze will be meeting with the media before practice gets started, and we'll have a viewing window tomorrow and Friday. You going to make it for the
the viewing window? I got nothing tomorrow morning. Let's go. Let's
tomorrow,
go check it out.
I'm fine tomorrow. Friday, I've got a doctor's appointment at 9, so hopefully I'm done in time for the viewing window. But looking forward to it. I want to see what the new guys look like and just see how things look after a summer of working out. So looking forward to that. We're just getting underway here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. I'm going to check in with our friend Jason Caldwell. He's usually here by now, or we've heard from him. I don't see a text from him. We'll see if we can at least get in touch with him if he can't be in here with us. I wonder if he took off. Did he tell us he was taking off this week? Maybe he said he wasn't going to be here. That's a dangerous thing, not for me, not to have anything like a text or an email of that, because I am prone to mix up dates or forget things like that. So I'll double check with him. But we'd love for you to join in here on the Wednesday Drive. You can do so by calling the Drive hotline. That's sponsored by Skybar, and the number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
Let's see. I mean, not a whole lot of big breaking sports news today. One thing that was made official that we'd been hearing about for a while regarding Auburn basketball, they do officially announce a 2-year series with Houston, who I've seen preseason number 4-1 number. I've seen them. Matter of fact, I've seen them preseason number 1 in one poll and in the top 5 in just about everybody's preseason. Auburn will be traveling to Houston, now not on campus. They'll be traveling to the home of the Rockets to play the Cougars in early November. I mean, that's an early ball game. And then next year, Houston will come to Birmingham. That way, you know, we've talked about this, about how much more it helps you in RPI to have played a team at a neutral site as opposed to playing them at home. So, I mean, either on the road or neutral sites are much better for your RPI. So neither of these games are going to be on campus.
Well, you have more runway as far as what a quad one or quad two game is when the game is not at your building, right? Because it's like, what are the rules? Like team has to be ranked 1-50 or something, or 1-25. Or
1-30, I think.
Yeah, it's some crazy, you know, it's like that.
If it's at home, 1-50. If it's at neutral site.
Yes, I mean they're and then you have even more if it's a true road game.
Right.
So it's a worthwhile. I mean I think if you look at last year's schedule and you think one of the reasons Auburn was a 4 seed was because they played too many home games in the non-conference and they didn't play enough tournament teams away
and those,
from home.
And those home games from teams that a lot of them appeared like they would be quad one games, the teams fell out of the quad one range. And so that's why you remember it took a long time for Auburn to pick up that quad one.
It seems like Bruce came away thinking, okay, well, maybe there weren't enough sure things on last year's schedule. It was teams that projected well,
right,
but they weren't teams that had historically year in and year out produced at a really high level. Now you're talking about Duke and Purdue and Houston. I mean,
we're hearing there will be. I mean, it's already.
Well, we're waiting for the Atlanta opponent, right? There's going to be an opponent in the hoops giving.
It's been written in different places and talked about that it's expected to be Ohio State,
right?
But there's nothing official yet.
And Ohio State has not necessarily had consistent championship success.
No, that's true.
But they were a good quality program down the stretch last year and had a had 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 they've had. big years in the past. So I think it's a it feels, and I also don't think Bruce would do this with the schedule if he didn't think he had a team that could
compete. No, absolutely. Absolutely. You don't want to schedule all these teams if you don't think you have a chance of winning.
I mean, or even if you feel good about the team, but it's a bunch of brand new players, you wonder if it would damage their confidence to be playing these kind of games if you don't think they can, if they're not winning them. I think with Bruce and this Auburn team, I mean, he's got a battle-tested group, both his returning veterans. I mean, and J.P. Pegues has played in big games as a point guard, including NCAA tournament games. So it makes sense to challenge a team like this one with an out-of-conference schedule, especially if you think it's going to pay dividends in the NCAA tournament.
Yes. And speaking of basketball, the United States men's team in the Olympics with a rematch with the South Sudan team that nearly beat them just before the Olympics started. You remember JT Thor really had a big ball game against them, and it took a LeBron James layup in the closing seconds for the U.S. to pull out a one-point win. Not the case today. The U.S. led by 12 at the end of the first quarter, by 19 at the half, and they win 103-86 today to go 2-0 thus far in the Olympic tournament. By the way, JT Thor coming off the bench today, 3 of 9, 1 of 3 from three-point range, finished with a total of 7 points.
Yeah, huge game for Bam Adebayo. Comes off the bench with 18 points on 8 of 10 shooting. I mean that's the dangerous thing about Team USA. It's not just that, you know, they've got the best starting five of any team in this Olympic Games. It's also that they can go to the bench.
They had better have, you know, the best guys. Yeah. At the end of the bench.
Well, they're able to take a guy like Joel Embiid and say, "This is your game where you sit out. You know, we're not going to play you today because we want to get the other posts involved." And so it's like, yeah, I think it's just to see the way this team is playing. The Serbia win was probably more impressive because I think there's a chance Serbia is the second best team in this tournament. We'll see how the medal thing shakes out, but I think Serbia could end up being certainly one of the two or three best teams in the entire Olympics, and the United States, you know, was able to handle Serbia with relative ease, especially when Jokic wasn't out there. But it's as expected right now that the United States is able to outclass a lot of these teams just because you can throw so much talent,
yes,
and so many different combinations,
so many different lineups. That have so much talent at them. So a little bit of basketball as we get started, though. But anything on your mind, sports wise, here on the eve of fall practice, we'd love to hear from you. What would you like for us to be watching closely tomorrow? What are you most interested in the early days of fall football practice?
Are there still people really holding out hope that it's a quarterback competition
I guess there are, because
that's crazy talk. I'm sorry. To me, I mean, and look, things can happen.
Sure.
But like Peyton Thorne
has won the job.
Yes,
He is QB1.
Peyton Thorne is QB1. He has beaten out the competition, and he will go through fall camp as the first team quarterback. Now, if that changes,
sure, you never know if an injury or just something catastrophic on or off the field.
The plan is not to audition quarterbacks this fall.
The plan is to find, right now, Wimp Sanderson asked me today, who's the number two? And I said, that's what they need to find out as quickly as possible, who the number two quarterback
right.
is.
Right, and I don't think it's a given that it's Hank, right?
No, which is what I don't either. I think Holden, toward the end of spring, looked like he stepped back up. And of course, then there's Walker White, who's, you know, just now, I mean, has been on campus for over 6 months. So, I mean, you couldn't count him out because he hadn't gone through last season and understanding the program. So I'm really interested to see how the battle for the backup quarterback goes.
Yeah, I think maybe when spring opened, Auburn was interested in seeing how much better Peyton was, or if Peyton was indeed that much better than the other options. You got the sense pretty early on in spring practice, the coaching staff came away with their answer, and their answer was there is distance between Peyton Thorne and any other quarterback on this team right now. That hasn't changed since spring practice is over. I know folks, I get the sense because of the passes Hank threw in the bowl game, or because of the one pass Hank threw to Cam
that Cam made a great play on.
Right, I think there's this there's this hope among some Auburn folks that, you know, that it's ultimately not going to be Peyton Thorne when the season starts. And to me, it's relatively rare that we have a pretty boring situation at quarterback in fall camp. And I mean that because there's not a really wide open competition for the number one job. Usually, I'm thinking about, like, in the last 10 years, I'd say half the time or so, you have an incumbent starter back with a pretty firm grasp of the job. Jarrett Stidham came back for a second year as a starter. Bo Nix came back for a second and third year as the starter. But often, whether it was Bo's first year or Jarrett's first year or what we had after Bo, there's been competition. You know, one of the questions going into fall camp has been, who's the quarterback going to be? I'd say what's different about this season, well, I mean, obviously on top of the fact that comparing it to last offseason, so many players are back from last year's team compared to when we were talking about last year at fall camp and it was just like, who's that? Like, you're, you know, all the beat writers and all the people covering and doing, like, they're looking at a number and they're having to check. Who's it? Okay. Like, that's going to be different because, yes, there are some new faces, but there aren't nearly as many of them. There are positions that have actual consistency from last year to this year, and there are other positions where it's wide open. But quarterback feels like it's not a terribly compelling battle right now because it's all but assumed that Peyton Thorne is your first team quarterback.
Yeah. There hadn't been any doubt in my mind for the whole summer, but I know there's some people, you're right, people that look back at the bowl game and look at those games where Auburn couldn't throw for, where, you know, we didn't throw for 100 yards and go, you've got to make a change. Well, he is, at least coming out of spring, he's by far the best option that Auburn has.
Yeah, if you evaluate them for a week or two in the spring, I mean, do you not take the best guy because there were some games last year where he struggled? Do you go with somebody else, even though, if Peyton Thorne was the best guy in the spring, and by all reports, I mean, if he hadn't been the best guy in the spring, we would have seen more competition for QB1. And a week into spring practice, would it be safe to say, Bill, that when you guys were out there, Peyton Thorne is taking virtually all of the first team reps? Like, would that be a fair way to describe?
Yeah, I would expect that.
Yeah, no, I mean, when you guys got to see him in the spring. Like
as the spring went on, he took more and more.
Yes, it was they evaluated at the start of spring and they decided that Peyton Thorne's the guy, and ever since then, it's been more about, and I think that's a good thing. To land on your starting quarterback really early in the spring is a good thing because then you can spend the off season tailoring the offense to what that guy does well and what that guy doesn't do well. Usually when we've seen situations where a team goes into fall with two or three options at quarterback and things can look disjointed, especially when they're different types of quarterbacks, right? When you've got a scrambler and a pocket passer and a pro style guy and a dual threat guy, when you're going to different styles of quarterback, it can be tough for an offense to get into really any sort of rhythm and have any sort of identity. And that's, I think that now, I mean, I guess Alabama would be an example of that last year, right? You think about the first couple games of the season for Alabama with Milrow and Simpson and the lacrosse player from Notre Dame all playing snaps at quarterback before they ended up going with Milrow and sort of what you saw the second half of the season versus the first half of the season. I would think that Alabama having Milrow for a full offseason, getting to tailor the offense to him, could lead to a really dangerous season for that quarterback. And I would hope that Auburn's coaches, knowing that it's going to be Peyton Thorne and being able to build around that, could lead to a better season for Peyton Thorne in year two.
Yeah, like we've talked about. I mean, it's happened so many times that quarterbacks, especially in that next year, and this is not just a second year, it's a first full year of going through the offseason through spring practice. So that's something that hasn't been at the top of my mind as far as things to be looking for to come tomorrow. We'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Love for you to join us. Tell us what you'd like for us to be looking for to let you know about on tomorrow afternoon show as we continue here with the Wednesday Drive.
Hey, this is Kevin Tuthope.
02 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 24 minutes after 4 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon with Bill and Dan. Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in as well.
What are you looking forward to seeing tomorrow, Bill? What's going to have your eye?
All right, so we were talking about it a little bit yesterday with Andy, and I mean, everybody wants to watch the receivers. There's no question. I mean, including me. I want to see how this receiving core looks. I mean, there are three of them that we haven't seen, didn't get a chance to see this spring. That would be freshman Perry Thompson and Malcolm Simmons and Keandre Lambert-Smith. So, I mean, they've added those three guys to the players that we saw this spring when Cam Coleman really just had a fabulous spring. Really liked everything we saw out of Robert Lewis and Sam Jackson. Bryce Kane for a true freshman. Just really want to, I mean, so everyone wants to see the receivers. I said yesterday, I'm really interested in watching on defense the secondary and the front. Just seeing, you know, how if they're going to be able to rotate without, you know, seeming that there's a drop off when you make a change. They have plenty of experience. I mean, with Gage Keys and Trill Carter, who went through the spring, and then bringing in Philip Bleedy and Isaiah Rakes, you got four guys that have played Power 5 football for quite a while. So you would think that should bode very well. But how do they adjust to the system? How are they doing things? And then in the secondary, I want to see, you know, who is the other safety? I think I think Bug Thompson's one. I want to make sure who the other one is. And I think it's critical to watch the young corners, because you've got to have more than two guys you can count on at quarterback, cornerback.
Where were we in the spring at safety? Who would have been
Caleb,
the guy?
Caleb Wooden.
Okay. Yeah. I'm trying to think. Who else? Would Sylvester Smith have been in that?
Sylvester Smith. You've got
Terrence Love.
Terrence Love. Who else? Seems like there was
a JUCO transfer.
Maybe Caleb Harris. I mean, there. Yeah, you sure did. Kid from Greenville.
Is that Robinson? No, that's not. Laquan?
Laquan.
Okay.
Yes.
He's
another safety.
He would be in the mix as well.
So. Yeah. So I mean, and the summer can go along. Things can change a lot from spring practice to fall practice.
Well, I wonder what the plan is behind Champ Anthony at slot too. Like, I wonder who would be next up if something happened to Champ, and what they would
do.
Is that something where they would look at some of these safety options and move them? I mean, some of those guys have played.
Rather move a corner though.
But then who's going on the field for that? You know what I mean?
That's what I'm talking about. Third corner. The third outside corner, and then who are the backup? I mean, you've got so many young guys. Antonio Kite and J.C. Hart are probably the next guys as far as experience. But, Jake Crawford, I mean, got a lot of talk this spring. I'm wondering, you know, who else could step up in there at corner?
I mean, to me, that is the – And I don't want to necessarily – I don't want to say weakness, but a vulnerability for Auburn.
Well, that's a question right now.
Yeah. I would think that a vulnerability for Auburn would be beyond your top – but beyond your starters at corner and nickel. You're looking at guys, you know, anybody else.
You're looking at some green players. I mean, players with a lot of inexperience. And look, it is very rare – that you're going to go through a season where you're not going to have to use those guys, because at some point or another, one of your starters or more aren't going to be available for at least a little while.
Well, think about how much Kane Lee played last year.
Right.
Like, that was Kane. I mean, Kane Lee was a backup defensive back last year. I mean, you had DJ and you had Nehemiah and you had Jalen and you had Keontae. Like, you had guys that could step out there and do it. And instead, Kane Lee had to go play because Auburn had, there was short. There were times when they were short with veterans. They didn't have those guys in the lineup, and so yeah, I just think Keontae, who's struggled with injuries in his career in the past, I would think that Keontae and Kane are really, really important pieces to this year, because beyond them, you're asking some pretty inexperienced football players to play a huge role, and that's, Bill, you look at Auburn's schedule, like that's one of the harder. I mean, the not that anybody gets days off in the conference, but your outside corners are asked to. I mean, that is such an important position now, and if you're,
it's critical. It is absolutely critical.
I mean, you're
now
facing NFL receivers on so many of these teams, and that's where Auburn hopes to be with the receiver position. But you need to be able to play on the other side too. And yeah, I think defensive back. It would be a really welcome development if a young defensive back looked like a guy who could play starters minutes this fall. Somebody beyond Keontae or Kayan or Champ Anthony's. If somebody like Antonio Kite or J.C. Hart,
Jay Crawford,
if somebody like that looked ready for prime time, that'd be a really important step. That'd be a really huge development for Auburn this fall.
Yeah. So I mean, we'd love again for you to tell us what are your concerns or what are you really interested in seeing. What would you like for us to keep an eye on? I mean, we will do that if you let us know. We'll try to keep an eye out if you want us to check the offensive line or the position.
Well, that's a question I had for Ferguson on the most recent podcast when we were previewing fall camp. Is like if I think we've talked about the offensive line like there are five starters for much of the offseason when you think about Percy and Too Tall at tackle, Dylan Wade, Jeremiah Wright at guard, Connor Liu at center. Who could crash that party and where? Like, if it's not those five guys in your starting lineup, who could make a push to be included? Would it be Tyler? Because we've heard a lot of Tyler Johnson.
Yeah, he's a young guy that could. I mean,
is there a Tyler Johnson Too Tall competition going there for right tackle? Is it Percy?
Every time we've watched, Tyler's been the second guy at the left. He's been working out at the left tackle. But I guess there could be if they're concerned about Too Tall at the right tackle.
If you feel better about your second left tackle than your first right tackle, sometimes your second left tackle becomes.
I think more at guard where you've got guys like
Muskie.
Jaden Muskrat and EJ Harris. Mm-hmm. I think those two guys
competing
could
with
push
Jeremiah
Wright there at the right guard. And then, of course, it all depends on how well Dylan Wade has taken to moving inside. Everybody has always said he appears to be more of a natural guard, but this will be the first time he's really playing it.
Not to pretend that, because I understand why people even last year would view the unit with some skepticism as far as are they going to be able to hold up against high-level competition. Auburn has a lot of guys with at least one career start under the belt, right? I mean, you think about the backups and stuff. I mean, you're going to get a. I mean, Tate Johnson is still still in the picture. This has to be Tate's last year. I mean, Tate was the freshman center that got called into action because Nick Broms was going to walk away from football right before. Remember, Nick Broms got bad injury news right before what was going to be his senior year as Auburn center. Nick started what two or three years at center before getting the injury news, and Tate Johnson finds out a couple weeks before the season that he's going to be your starter,
and he was
he wasn't
a true freshman, he was a
redshirt freshman then,
yes, and that's been a few years,
yeah, so it's got to. I mean, Tate Johnson's been, I mean, he's one of the last Malzahn signees on the team. I mean, there aren't that many guys. We were saying there weren't that many guys on the team in uniform. It's a short number, right, Bill? If you go players on this Auburn team who were in uniform for the 22 Arkansas game, the last time Arkansas came to Auburn, Harsin's last game as head coach, like, there really aren't that many players from that team.
No, you're right.
Still on this team. Like, it's pretty shocking. It's like, maybe 15, like it's a short number, and so to have a short list to have those guys there, and I think to have enough depth that you feel like you have 9-10 guys capable of starting on the offensive line, and I don't know if that's exactly where
they're really close to that, and whereas just a couple of years ago they didn't have five. I mean, really.
They didn't have five. I mean, when Hugh Freeze arrived, I mean, you could argue they didn't have three.
No, that's why they went out to the portal and signed as many guys as they could.
Yeah, wasn't the starting lineup last year of four guys who joined the team
and
one holdover? Like it was something crazy like that. And it was like, I mean, it's drastic the way that they've, that's one of several positions where it's unrecognizable from 2 years ago. They've still added it from last year to this year, but just being able to completely make over a room like that and do it in a way where you feel better than you did a couple of years ago.
But now I did saw where Brian Stultz was doing five things to keep an eye on. That's one of his five. Is the offensive line really as improved as a lot of people think, including coaches? I mean, sure, that's something to keep an eye on.
Well, I would look. I mean, much the same. I mean, a lot of the same stuff we're saying about Peyton Thorne. Who I almost called Jarrett Stidham just now. I got to stop doing that. But some of the things about Peyton Thorne are also true of other players on the team, right? You think about the Auburn offensive line last year. Those were a bunch of guys who, some of them missed spring practice. Some of them arrived right before spring practice started, but they were first-year players acclimating themselves to Auburn and the SEC. And so the thought that a Tutal Miller or a Dylan Wade could be Connor Lue could be much better in year two. Mm-hmm. Like we've seen college football players who have, I mean,
usually that's the biggest jump that players are going to make. I mean, any sport, just about any level, their second year, they know what's expected, and they usually are much better at preparing for that.
And the off season is very different in that in that second year when you've been on the team rather than when you've joined the team and had to. I mean, look, Bill. After the past couple of days, I'll give some guys a pass for their first year at Auburn because they were drained from the move. Right, moving's just brutal. Just takes it out of you, right? So I mean,
yeah, moving cross country, not just cross town.
I mean, maybe that's why Peyton Thorne was struggling those first couple of weeks.
That was a pretty big move.
Still shaking off the effects of the move. Right. Yeah,
we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Yes, congratulations, Dan, on the move, and on Jack Flaherty, who is now on your roster.
Oh,
as Hayden Robleski is sent to the minors. So we will get to our bottom of the hour break. Stick with us here on The Drive.
Email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls, and we'll head to The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar and James at the lake. James, how you doing, man? It's been a while.
Man, it has been a while. And I've been into something the last, at least this football season, and I realized over the weekend it's driving me slap crazy and almost cost me a lot of money too. And the word is politics. So to remain a little, I just had to get away. So I cut the thing on Monday, and lo and behold, I guess they first called my good friend Ken. You remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Boy, and Ken, he wrote that great book, by Gene Lorenzo.
Absolutely.
Oh, man, he's such a great guy. I'm going to say about him, I hate to ask this thing, I say him and one other guy is the only two people that Auburn I have to say sir to. All right, so we know he's alive.
Well, it's good to know that you are. I mean, I was a little worried because we hadn't heard from you for a while.
Right. Well, what about, I'm going to say the other guy was Olin. Is he still around? Olin.
I remember the last time we heard from Olin. I believe he still is.
He's one of our favorites.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, he absolutely is because the favorite boy is over there, hear him. But anyway, I was listening to you when he was talking about those wide receivers, and you kept on, you never did mention his name. I'll get the phone, I'll see the call right then. So finally you got to it. The best wide receiver over the university ever had, you got to it, by the name of Beasley.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, that was the question, remember? It was like, who was the lat or the the closest thing to the hype with an incoming receiver,
the most eagerly
from Cam Coleman, and it's like I couldn't think of anybody but Terry Beasley.
Yeah, I mean, talking to people who have covered the team for decades, right? And it's crazy to think like Justin Ferguson even qualifies now for that honor. But like, you know, people who have covered the team for a while, you know, the recruiting guys, you know, they I was trying to find out from them, like when was a more eagerly anticipated debut at wide receiver, especially for a true freshman? And you could even say, when was a more anticipated debut at any position for a true freshman?
Right, absolutely. And what if we'd have got that guy from Fairland? Did we almost not get him?
Oh, yeah, Ryan. Mm-hmm.
Well, we really would be crazy then. So let me tell you about this. So when we had freshman football, when Sullivan to Beasley.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So then the change from the 4 yards and a cloud of dust came on the opening play of freshman game against Chattanooga. It was a fly pattern, a completion of about 55 yards, and then nobody hollered. Everybody's mouth was wide open. They couldn't believe what they saw.
Well, you know, it got to be where you sort of expected that on the opening play of a lot of ball games. Was that and I'm sure you can remember, James. We'd go to ball games to watch the warm-ups, too, and watch Ralph Brock warming up before the game, because you knew that if Pat had a good game, Ralph wasn't going to get to go in because Auburn would be too far ahead and Tommy Traylor would have to come in and run the ball.
Absolutely. That was crazy. All right, one more thing about – of course, that was 1969.
Uh-huh.
It's when Beasley bit there, and he died in January of this year.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sad. Absolutely.
But it was about 69. It was a great Sullivan to Beasley. But the Gators had something called Reeves to Alvarez.
Absolutely.
All right.
That was in seven. That was, but did they play as freshmen too? I mean, I know the story, and I remember the 9 interception game.
Right. That's what I was getting at. See, that stands out in my mind. You know, I hate the Gators worse than anything known to man. Is the dang gone Gators, but 9 interceptions, that's been sitting up there for all these years. Nobody's even come close to that, I don't think.
No, and teams, just think about it, teams throw the ball a whole lot more now than they did back then, a ton more.
Right, but you don't get those 5 or 6 interceptions. Surely you bench somebody for
one of the things that's changed, though, the passing game is so much more intricate now and so much more precise. Back then, it was a lot more of you didn't have as many of the shorter passes. I mean, all you'd have back then would be a screen or a little flare to a running back, and the rest of the stuff was pretty deep. You'd have a lot more deep passes back then than you do now.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to talk to you guys. One more thing about 1969. All right, that's the most monumental year and events in my lifetime.
Oh, yeah?
All right. And you've got to think about this. What all happened in 69?
Let's see. July Woodstock? 20th of 69 was the landing on the moon. Woodstock was in 1969 as well. It was.
Well, who won the World Series?
The Mets.
Who won the Super Bowl? That's what they call Super Bowl then.
Is that the Namath?
Well, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, it was the Jets.
Sure was.
Jets, the Mets, the moon, and Woodstock.
That's right, that's guys. Pretty significant. Yeah, you're right. You're right about that, James.
What are you? Anyway,
and you survived it all.
Now, hold on. Don't you also get Beard Eaves opening
it
in
did.
1969? Beard Eaves Memorial Coliseum opens earlier that year with Pistol Pete.
Hey, it was that year. And the basketball LSU guy, did he not come?
Yeah, Pistol Pete.
Pistol Pete, and I believe a band called the Rolling Stones. Is that the Bill? You've heard of them.
I believe
in 1969, during Beard Eaves' first year of existence, the Rolling Stones play a couple of shows there.
Did 1 year, maybe not that year, but did not Elvis get over
there? Elvis did. It was in the 70s because I was an usher.
Oh, golly. Are they ever going to tear that place down?
You just feel like they have to put up a great parking structure, maybe with something in the bottom. But I'm amazed that it's still there and hasn't you know, hasn't been taken down.
There's still
offices in it.
Offices in it. I know wheelchair basketball, AU active. You know, they're able to play on the court there, which is still it's a beautiful basketball court. A lot of folks still use the concourse for walking, you know, a walking track. Mm-hmm. But there weren't wasn't it used for COVID inspections?
Yes,
during it. Yeah, it was, yes, they used it as a COVID testing site during
and also
giving and vaccines
shots.
And yeah. And the vaccine, yeah, and the vaccines was, it was also one of the university's vaccine stations.
I wish they'd tear it down. See, other words, I wish they would tear it down and build us some of the trees out there like the groves up over at Ole Miss.
I am doubtful, James.
That's going to be a green space.
I am doubtful that they would turn it into a huge green space for the university, but that would be gorgeous.
Gorgeous. We're getting this about it. You guys know that they are actually working on the North scoreboard.
Yes. Yes, I do. Yeah, how about that? That's great. It's years overdue.
I think that scoreboard was also put up in 1969, right? Isn't that?
Probably.
I hate to take up your guys' time. This was one more thing. I happened to work there, the parking lot, in 1948.
Wow.
Okay, the year before Shug came.
How many seats did the stands hold back then?
It wasn't no 35,000. No. It come with Shug. So it was 16,000. Anyway,
wow.
How much did it cost to leave your horse there in 48?
My only job working for my uncle there in the parking lot, right where the campus police building it still is today.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Had one job is to watch this space. It's for the governor of Alabama, who had to be Big Jim Holfram. That was don't let nobody park in there with a big black Mercury. So. 48, whatever the coach was, I can't remember. But Big Jim Folsom come over there, and I had a thing when I saw that big old car come in there. That's when I parked. And he had two big guys with him, big, great big guys go in with him. And when he come back, I realized why they was going in with him. They had to have towed him out of there for being drunk when he got done.
That's security, man. That's
right. You have to call more often. All right, James. Don't do this to us.
It is. Yeah, it's great hearing from you. Please. Don't take so long between calls.
There you go. Section 33. Keep a look. I'll be there.
I hear you, James. Great hearing from James at the lake. We need to get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us. We've got calls holding. We're right back here on The Drive.
Achilles tendonitis.
Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Got a couple of minutes left here in hour number one, and let's get back to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Tex, who's not at the lake today, huh?
Today. Amen to that. Not today. Soon, and very soon. So my question is, I didn't drink at lunch, and I didn't drink at midday. Did I actually hear that the scoreboard in the north end zone is going up?
Well, the construction has begun for it. I still don't think it's expected to be up and functional in time for the start of the season.
This is the retirement tour for the old scoreboard. This last season will be
what you can see when you go by is the framework, and I mean they're having to put a whole lot more in the foundation because it's not obviously just going to be a scoreboard that's there in the north end zone.
It's the victory lap.
All right. Okay. I don't think it can make a lap.
No, you're right.
Lobbying for that to be changed for 20 years, been lobbying for that.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, by the way, Dan, nobody that ever played for Coach Nix would ever go into Beardy's to walk or run because we spend many a day in there on the steps and running around that track that's in Beardy's.
Well, non-athletes. Yeah.
So, anyway, the last thing is you're talking about Pete Maravich playing in in Beardy's Coliseum. What didn't he play in the last game in the barn?
I'm not sure if it was the. I'm not sure it was the last game. It was one of the last games. You're right. So we can look that up. We're out of time here for hour number one. Text if you want to. We'd love to talk to you some more, but we've got to get to our top of the hour break here on the Wednesday Drive.
Capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and we'd love for you to join in. It is the eve of Auburn football practice, and we'll be out there, have a viewing opportunity tomorrow after we hear from Coach Freeze early tomorrow morning, so looking forward to that. So I've asked if there's anything you'd like for us to be looking at so that we can report back to you about tomorrow afternoon. Love for you to tell us. Also, a bit of news regarding Auburn basketball. A long-rumored matchup has been officially announced. Auburn will be playing the next two seasons against the Houston Cougars, a preseason top five team by just about everyone. They will travel out to Houston to play at the Rockets Arena, not on campus at Houston. And that's very important because it is better for your RPI, for your strength of schedule, to not to be playing at least neutral sites. That's obviously not going to be a neutral site for Auburn, but Houston will then come to the state of Alabama, and the two teams will play up in Birmingham.
Yeah, I think the Toyota Center is the arena in Houston where the Rockets play. That's Jabari Smith's home arena,
right,
as a member of the Rockets. The Fertitta Center is the 7100 on campus, 7100 seat on campus arena. That was renamed after a former a restaurant magnate. I think that's right. He was also he's got the same name as he's the cousin of the guy who made billions of dollars when he sold UFC. But Tillman Fertitta is the chairman. He's the CEO of Landry's, the restaurant chain.
Okay.
And he donated $20 million to Houston and got the building named after him. And so Houston
that'll usually help.
That'll do it.
The name.
And so so Houston plays on campus in the Fertitta Center, but Auburn will go and play in the Toyota Center, the NBA arena.
So that's the big basketball news. We will get to whatever you would like sports wise. Let's get to the Drive Hotline, though, sponsored by Skybar, where Tex has been hanging on. Hey, Tex.
Yeah, so we were talking a little bit about Beard Eves. I have a lot of great memories in that place. We used to have a basketball player by the name of Charles Barkley that was pretty popular in my mom.
Yeah,
and dad
I remember the guy. Yeah.
Well, my mom and dad wanted to meet Charles, so Charles came and sat with my mom and dad while Cindy was playing. And had kids coming up, and I watched a young Charles just explain to the kids, if you just give me till halftime, I'll be down there to sign autographs. And he was kind enough to spend the first half sitting with my mom and dad. And even as my dad was not in good health not too long ago when he passed away, he would always talk about that and about what Charles, somebody like that taking the time to spend time with him. So I hope they don't tear it down. Now that I started thinking about it, because it's also the place that Cindy and I went in to meet with Coach Nix and tell him that we were getting married. And
oh,
I like
wow.
telling this story because it's hilarious. He looked at me and he said, "Son, don't go into coaching. You got way more to offer than being a coach, and you'll never make any money." I said, "Yes, sir." And then he looked at Cindy and said, "Cindy, ladies don't chew gum in public." Now, you got to remember, this is 1983.
Yeah.
So when we had a reunion when Coach Nix wasn't doing very well and Mr. Lloyd was there and we're walking up and he goes, "Paul, it's Tex and Cindy and the kids." He grabbed me by the face and pulled me close. He goes, "I hear you're doing good and you're not coaching." "Yes, sir, I'm not a coach." And he goes, "Where's Cindy?" He grabbed Cindy and he pulled her close and says, "You're not chewing gum right now, are you?"
So, he remembered that. Wow.
He remembered that story. So it's remarkable. So people down here in Baton Rouge, and Cindy and I have lived here for 35 of our 40 some odd years and together. So, but that's what those things and those stories are what always bring me back to Auburn. Because I walk by buildings and have memories. Mm-hmm. I walk past Plainsman Park and remember the Ole Miss game. Yeah, I walk past Plainsman Park and remember the band used to practice on the field during the fall because that's the only practice area.
Oh, yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, so I remember the dumbest things about being there. I don't remember where any of my classes were, but I remember.
I didn't go to enough of them to remember. I don't know. It's like...
Well, until I met Cindy, I probably didn't, off the record, make very many myself. So, but anyway, I hope they don't tear it down. I think it's a great arena, and we are big supporters of the Auburn University wheelchair tennis team. And are involved in adaptive sports, and I would hate to see that arena go away for the use of those.
It's just such a valuable space that so much of it isn't used now. That's the shame. The amount of space that it takes up for the use that it gets right now.
Absolutely. Well, I didn't mean to take up too much time. I was going to hang up, and then I started thinking about Beard Eves.
No, that's cool. I'm glad you didn't.
All right, guys. We all take care.
All right. Take care, Tex. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Let's get back to the Drive Hotline, and John is up next. Hey, John.
How you guys doing?
Doing fine.
I just and last time I called in, I was off the radio for 5 minutes, and y'all had talked about what I was talking about. But anyway, so I don't want to say something that you have already talked about. But did you hear about Doug Smith passing away?
Saw that the other day. That's really sad. I mean, I remember the big. He was such a. Just such a nice guy, but a giant of a man that Coach Dye brought in from East Carolina.
He was a gentle giant for sure. I made the mistake playing intramural basketball against him. And I had the ball in the lane and gave him the old head and shoulders pump fake. And it worked, unfortunately, because he went up and came down on me. And I know I probably didn't come close to hitting the free throws, but he is always a great guy. And, you know, he had a long career in the NFL.
Oh, he did. Did many, many years.
One time he got shot like a month before preseason camp back home, and he still missed like 2 or 3 days of practice and still played that year. But and I think he had been coaching, hadn't he, in Houston?
I believe so. Yeah, I mean, he was one of those guys that was really ahead of his time as far as you didn't see 300-pound guys. I mean, he was 6'6". 300 plus that were as agile as he was.
No kidding. He was an incredible athlete. But anyway, I'd actually just had a phone call about that a minute ago, and I said, no, I didn't hear about that. So,
yeah,
called Danny Stutak to confirm. He said, yeah.
Yeah, he passed away late last week, I believe.
Yeah, the news was confirmed. News was confirmed by some of his friends in Houston. You know, he'd retained relationships with some of the people who had played with him and covered him when he was a Houston Oiler. And yeah, one of the sports directors at a TV station in Houston was the first one with the news, and someone who would a longtime friend of Doug Smith confirmed it back on I think it was Thursday last week.
Well, sad news, and I just heard about it. So, I did not know if you talked about it already, but he was a great Auburn player.
No, we may not have mentioned it on the air. I'm glad you brought that up, John.
Yeah, thank you for thank you for bringing that up because Doug Smith and
we had a drawing a pencil sketch of him in his Birmingham Stallions uniform at the back bar of the Supper Club for probably 20 years.
Oh yeah, that's right. I didn't realize. You know, I may not have realized who that was.
Right. Well, a lot of people thought it was Cornelius Bennett. And I said, no, he was a lot better than Cornelius.
Yeah, no kidding.
But anyway, guys, have a good day, and I will talk to you later.
You too, John. Good hearing from you. 334-321-1390. Again, that's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. It's the second hour of the show, and hour number two brought to you, as usual, by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise, if you have some thoughts about fall football practice, or if you've got some questions that you'd like us to try to help you answer or help get answered, let us know, because we will we'll have an opportunity the next couple of days to watch a little bit of the first couple of days of practice. You can't get an awful lot from, except, you know, who's lining up where, who is getting the early work with different units, things like that. But we also get a chance to eyeball some of the new guys who haven't been here, see the physical changes in some of the players that have happened over the past few months.
Oh, right. It's one of the more, one of the more interesting things about the offseason is monitoring, if there's any major changes. You've mentioned a couple of the younger players seem to have gained some weight in the I would think that was the plan, going in for some of these guys to bulk up. Who was it? Wasn't it Champ Anthony who would?
Yeah, he'd gained about 15 pounds.
15, 20 pounds since the start of spring practice. I mean, that's a guy who, last year, one of the lightest players on the team. And I think with the expectation that Champ's going to play a lot of snaps in the secondary, they want him a little bit bigger. Some of the ends, right? Some of the freshmen edge rushers and even some of the receivers showing impressive physical gains.
Tex, who we were just talking to, had not heard the news about Doug Smith, and we had pointed out, he married a great Auburn women's basketball player as well in Becky Jackson, and said he was sorry to hear that news. And he said he wants us to keep trying, and I'm sure quite a few people will want this as well, to observe the quarterback accuracy. Want to see the accuracy of the quarterbacks, not Peyton Thorne, I'm sure, and all of them.
And I would imagine that since we were saying at the top of the show, one of the real competition at quarterback feels like, not that Peyton Thorne couldn't play his way out of it, but it feels like Peyton Thorne is a pretty secure job, a pretty secure hold on the QB1 job.
If he is completely inaccurate something like that, then...
Secure holds can become less secure.
Sure, they can.
You play your way out of that situation, but as it's in, we open fall camp with Peyton Thorne seemingly having a pretty secure hold on the QB1 job. I would think that accuracy could be maybe the main determining factor in deciding which one of those guys is going to be the next man up.
Because you're expecting much more of the receivers. The receivers, you have some proven guys who at other places have shown that they can run precise routes and know where to be and where the ball should be. So, yeah, that's something that should be probably easier to determine this year than we did last year, when there were some receivers that weren't really used to running precise routes. It would just sort of be, and this is not a knock against their schools, but at some places it would just be run till you're open. We'll see if we can get the ball to you.
And I would also say last year, as Peyton and I think Peyton and Robbie both had ups and downs in fall camp, but you didn't come away feeling like accuracy was a huge strength of the room. I mean, Peyton had an up and down fall camp, and I think Robbie, I think accuracy was an issue with Robbie throughout his time as a college football quarterback. So I think it's a good question by Tex to wonder, like, where are we going to see improvement there?
334-321-1390. Back to the Drive Hotline. And Yellowhammer is next. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, Hammer.
Hey, afternoon. I wanted to jump on Texas' comment about Beard Eaves. I'm kind of a big fan of architecture, and I can see times where things are repurposed. Like here in Auburn, there's a former gas station that's a restaurant now. Mm-hmm. And there's valuable buildings that cost a lot of money to tear down and then a lot of money to build a new one. And there's Beard's Eve sitting there, and that could be repurposed. The university could say, here's our needs. We got an architecture school. It could be their assignment, or you could find a famous architect, whatever. But that building is huge, and the space in there, especially as a concert hall, it was a great concert hall. And so,
it was better for the sound was better for concerts than it was for competition, for sports competition.
And it's just, there's all those rings around, set what, three levels, four levels of rings around the main opening there, mm-hmm. in the center, you know, the field, not the field, but
yeah,
the court,
different levels of concourse, right?
And so as far as that big space in the middle, I don't quite know what to do with that. But
yeah, one thing that is always, you know, that is always mentioned is, but what about parking? Because you know you've moved so much of, you know, remember when you used to be able to drive anywhere on campus? Now campus is almost purely pedestrian, and now they're just parking for athletic events has been moved further and further and further out. So that's one thing that has been talked about, and that's where when I was saying a while ago, I was a little surprised that it hadn't been repurposed but that space hadn't been reused as at least part of it for extra parking when you need it for athletic events because of the huge crowds.
Well, structurally, I suppose the ground floor could be utilized to where that big basketball court center could become parking, I suppose.
I'm sure somebody could come up with a pretty good plan. And you're right, Auburn's got plenty of amazing architects that should be able to come up with some use for it. I mean, they're getting used out of it now. There's still some offices in it, but there is an awful lot of unused space.
Well, we've got to start using that space. I mean, I'm sure there's needs. They're building buildings all the time.
You're not kidding.
So there's got to be something that it really would work well with, I would think. The university just seems to be growing in a time when so many universities are going online and not investing in brick and mortar.
Oh, you're right. I mean, as you said that, I was just picturing in my mind it being turned into student housing / parking. I mean, that wouldn't be the most unbelievable thing the way
LSU
student
does that.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh well, sure. They used to, at least. I know they had apartments there at the stadium. In the stadium, there were student apartments in there.
Yeah, I had a friend who actually had one of those.
Wow, that would be great if you were a football fan. I guess if you weren't, that'd be a little annoying if you're trying to get anything done on Saturday nights.
Oh, well, there's acoustic damping. We could do something.
Golly, here. I don't know. I don't know how much damping you could do underneath Tiger Stadium.
No, okay. No damping there.
Oh, man.
The earthquake game, I guess, would have gotten to everybody, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No kidding. Oh, absolutely. I remember that. 88.
Well, thanks.
Guy Yellowhammer, good hearing from you. 20 minutes after 5 o'clock, we need to get to our first break of hour number two. Right back with more of your phone calls here on the Wednesday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. 24 minutes after 5 o'clock, Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls, and we'll get right back to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, and Clay is up next. Hey, Clay.
Hey, Bill. Hey, you when you bring up Beard Eve, that is like I'm 50, So that's like my groove.
Oh yeah.
That's where I grew up there, and I will there's actually two games that really stand out to me at Beard Eve. One was a Saturday afternoon, and there was probably at least 900 people in there watching Auburn play Georgia, and Ronnie Battle, he dropped in. I think he dropped 40.
Yeah, it was 40. It was 40 plus. You're right.
He might still have the record for most three pointers in the game, and we forget about how good he was. But the greatest finish to a game that I have ever been at was in 1993. And it was Auburn, Arkansas. They had just come into the league a couple of years earlier. And it was the game, we were down by two. And Tommy Joe Eagles was the coach.
Mm-hmm.
Timeout, it was probably like 10, 12, 15, probably like 10 seconds left. I can't remember the time on the clock. And we run a double screen off the inbounds pass, and Wesley Person hit a three from the corner, and Auburn beats Arkansas 81-80, and it was just berserky. We rushed the court.
Yeah, now, that was an Arkansas. That was a Nolan Richardson Arkansas team, right?
That dang sure was. That was a Nolan team. They were. I don't know what they were. I thought they were ranked close to. They were in the top 10 at the time, I think, when we beat them. And it was just unbelievable. But Ronnie Battle, he went stupid. Wesley Person went stupid. Aubrey Wiley went stupid that game. And I remember we were in the student section. We rushed the court. We didn't even get to half court is how many people were at the game.
that was one of the sad things about the Coliseum. It was great now if you were a fan and wanted to go and have great seats because my buddy Floyd and I would sit mid-court right behind press row every game. I mean, You're right.
It was very rare.
Alabama, Kentucky would be the only time the place was full.
That's right, because all the vet students would buy up all the Kentucky tickets.
Yep.
And then Alabama is the same. Other than that, you could go. Honest to God, Bill, we walked in, and I had my student ID, and I lied. I think I'm past the point of getting prosecuted.
Yeah, I think.
I used my student ID all the way up until the 2000s, and I would just walk up there, and I could buy a student ticket for $1 and walk in.
Yeah, because there wasn't any concern about squeezing you in. It's not like now where, I mean, it's a miracle if you can get a ticket.
Yeah. Now I'm paying $20 for a standing room ticket. Or you know, one of my buddies that was wise enough to get tickets. But that's probably my favorite. That game was probably was my favorite Auburn home basketball game that I've ever seen. Was that because it was beautiful and where I was sitting, you could see that play. You could see Wesley coming off the top screen. And you saw the second screen and said, he's going to the corner. And it was just velvet. And he hit that shot. And Nolan just put his head down and turned around. And he walked over and he sat down on the bench. So we don't need to tear it down just because of that game. We need to keep it up.
All right. That's great stuff, Clay.
All right. Thank you, Bill.
All right. Yeah, I mean there are some really cool memories. It's interesting. I mean we haven't jumped in with an Alabama win. You know a Chris Porter or some things like that. There were some great moments there in the Coliseum. And again, as Was it Yao Yellowhammer was talking about the concerts? Unbelievable string of concerts by, you know, rock and roll Hall of Famers there at the Coliseum. But, you know, I just don't know how much longer. Of course, like I said a while ago, I'm really surprised that something hasn't been done, that it hasn't been, you know, brought down and something else put there before now. And not that I know, it's not like it's on the schedule to be done anytime soon. So maybe, who knows, maybe Beard Eves outlasts us all.
We asked John Cohen about that when he was on the show earlier this summer, right? and he said that it was consistently a topic of conversation, mm-hmm, with Dr. Roberts, and something that I don't think the university, I mean, every master plan the university comes up with, right, and it feels like every 5 years or so that thing gets updated, and there's never, it doesn't seem like from the planning standpoint there's any appetite to keep Beard Eves around versus doing other stuff with that property. It's just a matter of actually executing,
right,
whatever
coming
vision
up with
you
that
have.
Plan, yeah. and getting it started.
But it seems like, yeah, I mean, I get the feeling that if you polled different higher ups at Auburn about what to do, I don't know if anybody would say the best choice on the board is to keep it.
No.
But there might be very different answers about what should happen to that space.
I think you're absolutely right about that. That may be the reason that it hasn't been, because nobody's ever been able to agree on, well, so what do we do? If are you going to completely tear it down, then what? Or are you
When you've been in meetings like that, and when everybody's got a different idea about what should happen,
you don't do anything.
Nothing.
That's exactly right. You don't do it. You move on to the next topic. All right, we will get to our bottom of the hour break. Still plenty of time for you to join in the final half hour here on the Wednesday Drive.
ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 20 minutes or so of the show here on this Wednesday. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls. And we'll get right back to the drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Again, that number 334-321-1390. And Jerry is up next. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to respond to something James said about Pete Maravich playing at Beard Eves.
Uh-huh.
If I remember correctly, Auburn had a guard named John Mingelt.
Yeah, John Mingelt was one of the top scorers. He's Auburn's all-time leading scorer. Still around. John still looks like he could play. But John was a guy that was just as likely to put up 40 as he was to score. But the pistol, of course, was He was an amazing show, and he came in for the, I believe that was the opening game at Beard Eves Coliseum. Well, at the time, it was Memorial Coliseum.
Fortunately, I was at that game.
Oh, yeah?
And if I remember correctly, combined, they put up over 100 points.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I believe Auburn won the game, I believe, but Pistol Pete put on an unbelievable show. I was not at the game.
It was fun.
I was not in college yet at that time.
Also, the one thing I'd like to see about practice tomorrow,
uh-huh,
or coming up, are the linebacker situation.
I think that's one of Auburn's right now. I think they feel very good about that linebacker situation with Eugene Asante and Austin Keys, you know, returning starters. And then you brought in Dorian Mausi. Oh, we learned that pronunciation.
I told you I met him, right? Waiting for fried rice the other day. Bumped into somebody in line and he introduced himself.
And then Fanage Gote coming in. They've got four very experienced linebackers, and then, man, you've got some really talented young linebackers behind him.
Saw a Duke thing on the Dorian on the backpack. I was like, I'm pretty sure I know which Auburn football player has Duke stuff and Auburn stuff, but impressive looking guy. You're not going to be shocked to learn that a grad transfer from Duke is bright.
No, bright, I would sort of expect
bright,
that.
Bright, and fun to talk to. And I think, you know, Auburn's added four linebackers. We'll see what kind of production they get from the kids. But right. I think Auburn with
DeMarcus Riddick, DJ Barber, those guys.
But I mean, but with Keys and Asante and Mousy and Gauthier,
mm-hmm.
you've got four guys I think that can produce as veterans.
Yeah, and some great recruits coming in.
Oh, absolutely. And really, I'm looking forward to this DJ Durkin defense. I really am. I just feel like it's going to be aggressive. It's going to be one that comes after quarterbacks.
As much as we're talking about the four veterans, I could see a situation where Riddick is making a play pretty early on. In I know not exactly the same, but I think he could find his way onto the field.
I think you'll see both DeMarcus and DJ playing early on special teams for sure to get them out there and let them hit somebody.
All right. Great info.
Appreciate it, Jerry. 334-321-1390. Who do we have up next?
John
is next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. I tell you what, from growing up watching like Tommy Joe Eagles and Aaron Swenson, Auburn basketball sure has changed, hasn't it?
Golly, no kidding. It is night and day.
No, it's one of those things that I feel like if you didn't not to gatekeep and say the younger people don't understand, but if you weren't at some of those empty arena games at Beard Eves,
when they had to cover the upper seats, covered the upper seats because they were never selling enough and trying to do something to make it look like, you know, there were more people and forced people to sit down lower to have more around the court.
Well, if I remember, didn't they start the Cliff Dwellers at half court and then just move them to the baseline to just basically cordon off that end zone?
Yeah, I think that's right.
But I have a question for you guys. I think it was 2019 Auburn made the trip up to play at Gonzaga. Am I misunderstanding, but was that part of a home and home and Gonzaga had a gentleman's agreement to come back in the future, or am I missing something there? How did that work?
I'm trying to remember. Do you recall Auburn Gonzaga basketball day?
That was a game Auburn
it was early
in the season, I believe during the year Sharif Cooper was ineligible. Early in that season, Auburn went up to.
I don't recall a whole lot of it. It was not a fun ball game.
No, Gonzaga.
I do now that I look at it,
was that game at Gonzaga or was that game in a neutral site?
Was it neutral in Spokane? Now that I think about it,
yes.
The game I'm talking about, November 2020, was in Fort Myers, Florida. That was part of a Fort Myers, Florida tip off. When Gonzaga beat Auburn 90-67.
Okay, maybe I'm mistaken. I thought we played at Spokane.
They played Washington, didn't they? Up in Seattle.
That's what I couldn't recall is Auburn going up to Washington to play Gonzaga.
Auburn went up to Washington to play Washington after Washington came to Auburn a couple of years ago and played at Beard Eves or played at Auburn Arena.
Gotcha. Okay, well, too much Mac McGadney back in the day had my brain fried. Thank you, guys.
Oh, man, some blasts from the past, no question about that. 334-321-1390, that's the drive hotline.
That's the Gonzaga team that takes out my UCLA Bruins in the NCAA tournament that year. In the Final Four, Drew, on the half-court walk-off by Suggs. Yeah, that's that team. So Suggs, yeah, they beat Auburn early on, and beat UCLA to go to the championship game that year in the Final Four. Close.
Something you mentioned.
What a run. I was the UCLA team that beat Michigan and Alabama to get to the Final Four. Yeah. A play-in game. Went from the play-in game to beating Michigan and Alabama, who at different points in the season had been the favorite to win the national championship and had a chance. Juzang has a chance. He could just pull up and hit the jumper, but instead he goes to the basket and
Gonzaga draws the charge, and then wins in overtime. Not that I think about it. Not that I went to two schools, and they've been eliminated from the Final Four in the last 5 years.
Yeah, one has got a couple of they've got a couple of trophies.
Not since I showed up.
No.
Yeah, I know. Seems like it. It was either me or John Wooden stepping away. One of those two things happened to limit the amount of people.
A lot of people are torn as to which one that could have been.
Oh, I got to show you the Neuheisel autograph, don't I? Of the student ID.
Well, I was going to say today came word on confirmation of something that you were. That is cool. That you were speculating the other day. Fan Day is officially going to be a week from Saturday, August 10th.
Not to get anybody in trouble, I think Perry Thompson might have spilled the beans a little too early on social media, and that tipped all of us off as to what was happening. Because he was
talking about the practice.
Yeah, well, he was talking about the On to Victory. The fact that there's early access for On to Victory members, and there will be some other special events for people who are people supporting Auburn's NIL fund for athletes, and they get some perks for Fan Day. But yeah, August 10th, an open practice at Jordan Hare.
Well, it's
do I have that right?
No. It's actually I don't think so. It says the Auburn football invites the Auburn family to a preseason kickoff fan fest on Saturday, August 10th, from 3 to 4. Now, On to Victory is going to have a private event and autograph session for its members, but that'll be after practice. Starting at 2:00, doors will open at 1:45. Auburn Kids Club members will be able to enter at 2:45, and then the general public will be allowed in 3 to 4 in the indoor complex behind the athletic complex.
Okay, so it was
Perry was talking about practice, probably for scholarship donors.
Okay, so Perry Thompson shared, still up 6 days ago, On to Victory. All subscribed On to Victory members are invited to a practice to watch practice starting at 9 a.m. You were invited to a closed practice on August 10th at 10 a.m.
Okay.
Before Fan Day, get a front row seat and join us as we get closer to the start of the season. That is exclusively for On to Victory members. Entry starts at 9 a.m. Practice starts at 10. That's from Perry Thompson's social media in the last week or so.
That's interesting because the release from Auburn doesn't say. I mean, I'm sure that's fine. I'm sure that's right. So it's sort of a double opportunity for On to Victory. They can watch practice, I guess, and then the fan fest. They will get early access to the players as far as autographs and spending time with them before the fan fest starts at 3.
Yes, On to Victory members receive general access for the first hour before the general public is allowed in at 3:00 for fan day as well. But I don't doubt that at all.
That's just not something that Auburn set out in its release today about Fan Day, because that's really that's not the Fan Day story. That's an extra perk.
That's an On to Victory. Yeah, that's an On to Victory fundraising thing. So they're and they're using the fact that people will get access to that practice to sell subscriptions in the next week and a half or so. If you want to, it's not too late to join On to Victory if you want to be at that practice.
Right,
on
and
the
be
10th.
Able to, and be able to go watch the practice and then have early access to the players before Fan Day gets officially started. So yeah, that's a couple of perks there for joining On to Victory. All right, we will get to our final break here of the afternoon. Still plenty of time for you to join in, 334-321-1390, as we wind it down on the Wednesday Drive.
Attention large property owners and
.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final segment here on this Wednesday. It's hard to believe. It's August tomorrow.
It's fall practice tomorrow.
Fall practice tomorrow.
We
had a caller a little while ago.
We're hearing from Coach Freeze tomorrow morning?
Yes, early. I'm early for you. 9
I'll be
o'clock.
There. I'll be there.
I'm looking forward to that.
I can just walk there now.
You can. It'll be 9 o'clock with Hugh Freeze tomorrow, and then we get to watch a little practice probably around 10:30 tomorrow. We had a caller a little earlier. I'm sorry, I forgot about this as we were getting calls. Was wondering about Auburn High. Auburn High will start its season August 23rd as they play. They host North Miami.
Yes, we have a caller asking. I believe Opelika is week 3. So, I mean, you're going to have some early action. Mm-hmm. Jacob, the new voice here at
Absolutely.
Auburn Network.
Jacob Goins. Yes.
Jacob Goins is going to be calling the games. 3 weeks from tomorrow, your first Auburn High School football game of the season, your first broadcast getting set in the middle of August. We were talking before the last
three
segment.
3 weeks from Friday.
3 weeks from, oh, yeah, today, I keep thinking, I'm so thrown off, Bill. I keep thinking, yeah, anyways, don't
That's
ask.
That's just wishful thinking.
Yeah, I'm back. I'm going on about 4 hours of sleep these last couple of days, too,
I didn't,
with the different
for some
stuff,
reason, so. I didn't get any sleep last night. I don't know what it was.
I'm shaking it off, but I'll be back in regular form soon. The On to Victory fan day practice that has been, I mean, it wasn't just on Perry Thompson's social media. It was On to Victory tweeted out on Friday as well. If you're an On to Victory member, you can get into the practice on August 10th at 9 a.m. Practice starts at 10 a.m. That will be closed to On to Victory members only, and that's a reason, if you're thinking about going to that practice, it's a reason to subscribe to On to Victory. I also noticed on the On to Victory
and that's
page,
probably, I would say, that is probably your first scrimmage of the fall.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
You're right. The timeline adds up. That's your Saturday practice week two.
Yep.
That's when you can get a scrimmage. And with a backup quarterback contract, you know, with a backup quarterback competition going on, you can see
competition in a lot of places. That's a very good practice to be able to see.
Those are two. Yeah, those first two scrimmages are going to be really, mm-hmm. really important to setting to finalizing the depth chart. Also, we were talking about some other stuff On to Victory's got going on. There is still time tomorrow, Thursday, August 1st. There is the Braves Experience with Butch and Tim. And they still have spots available for lunch at the Omni Hotel. At the Battery, VIP batting practice experience, meet and greet with Braves players, seats in one of Truist Park's executive suites. You can watch Braves Marlins alongside Tim Hudson and Coach Butch Thompson, and there's a post-game cocktail hour. Limited spots available for the Braves Experience with Butch and Tim.
Well, if you didn't have plans on being over at Hugh Freeze's, your guy Max Meyer is going for the Marlins.
Oh, you get to see Max Meyer, who's going to be trying to finish strong for a Marlins team that is full of guys that weren't on the team.
Yeah, name those guys. Goodness.
Usually they win the World Series before they do something like this, Bill.
Right.
But they've just decided that
they made the playoffs last year. That's close.
They have traded everything that wasn't anybody
they would take.
Bolted down everything that wasn't.
I think so.
I think the Cubs got some copper wiring out of the Marlins in a trade. Like, I mean, everything. Oh, by the way, that Butch and Tim Braves Experience is $5,000 each.
I
don't know if I mentioned that, but the full VIP experience is $5,000.
But that is amazing. Everything they're gonna.
Get. I mean, what? I mean, it's an experience you'll remember forever, especially a Braves fan or an Auburn baseball fan.
Oh yeah, no kidding.
Getting to sit there with Butch and Tim Hudson and taking a game at Truist.
Braves, by the way, win today. A couple of homers from Matt Olson, who has really struggled this year.
I believe the Braves, for the first time in a long time, had two players go back-to-back twice in the same game.
Hmm.
Did Matt Olson have a couple of homers?
Because
it probably would have been Matt Olson and somebody else for the Braves who had and I think that's first time since, I think the last time it happened with the Braves, David Justice was involved. So you got to go back a ways for the last time that you had two instances where the same players went back to back in different innings in one baseball game. But that happened today for the Atlanta Braves. Yeah. Who else?
Jorge Soler, your new leadoff man for the Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta, Jorge Soler. Mm-hmm. And did he had the homers?
No, he didn't. He just the other homers were. Travis Darnot had the other two.
Okay, so Olson and
Darnot. So it was the same two. It was Olson and Darnot back to back twice.
Yeah, same players, and that hadn't happened in a Braves game in 30-something years, where you had the same two players go back to back in different innings with home runs. But Olson and Darnot, a couple of dangerous bats. Whit Merrifield playing a little second base there in
Atlanta. He's going to get a look at second base.
Till Ozzie's back.
Nacho is sent back to AAA.
Not Joe second baseman anymore.
Yeah, not well, he'd never played second before. He'd been a shortstop. Came up and they tried him in second and 30 at bats, enough to see that he needs a little more seasoning.
Little surprised the Braves didn't try to land a big fish. Or maybe I'm not saying they didn't try, but a little surprised the Braves didn't
that they
land.
Didn't land a big fish. I thought they'd make another move. Before
thought they were well positioned to find a Garrett Crochet or a Tarik Skubal, who both, by the way, were not traded.
Right.
There was. Would you buy now that we know he wasn't traded? Do you think the Crochet contract thing might have?
I'm sure it had something.
Might have
to
made
do
some
with
people
him not being traded.
And I don't think it's necessarily like, oh, what kind of competitor is he or anything like. But maybe you're already giving up
just
prospects.
Concerned about the investment. That you're making on top of what else you give up.
The thought that you'd then have to also, and I, you know, maybe he's a trade candidate in the offseason, right? You'd think that maybe that's a guy.
Well, a lot of it depends on how he finishes down the stretch. If he still finishes strong and is healthy heading into the offseason, he'll be worth a whole lot more.
Yeah.
He'd be worth a whole lot more, but he might also be worth hanging on to if you think you could actually contend.
But I don't think the White Sox do. Like, probably that's the problem. That's an organization where I think that you...
They hung on to their two hottest properties in Crochet and Luis Robert, though.
Yeah, but how are they doing with those two guys in the lineup this year?
Well...
I just wonder if I feel like that's, you know what, but maybe it's the best thing for them to have a bidding war in an off season, right?